You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, Rob Hollis. That's H-O-L-Y-S-Z.
You got it.
Yeah. It's been a good year. We've had our year anniversary now since we came on new, strong editing. So it's been about a year now. We thank you for listening and for your constant support. I see people wearing hats, Inside of You hats or wristbands, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, what we really need is some Inside of You tattoos, though.
I don't know, man. Don't do that, guys.
If you get a tattoo, post it on social media, and Michael will bring you on the podcast.
Jeez, don't say that. Don't say that. That's not true. I mean, who knows?
We might call you.
Just,
if you get a tattoo,
hey,
we might call you.
You guys work on getting us some listeners, and then I know...
Tattoo the URL on your arm, apple.co/insideofyou.
Don't listen to this idiot. He doesn't know what he talks of. Hey, we got a great show tonight, or today. By the way, Welling and I will be in Boston and Toronto for a signing, and Kristen, Tom Welling and I will be in Toronto for a signing.
What date is that?
In August.
August.
Sometime in August. And the album, Left on the World's Beautiful Mess, is coming out, so make sure you download that if you want. And we made some good music and worked really hard on it. That being said, we got some more great content today. Who's our guest today, my friend?
Steve Lukather.
He was one of the original members. He is one of the original members of Toto. He wrote songs like Turn Your Love Around. He wrote The Tubes, She's a Beauty. He worked on the Michael Jackson Thriller album, the whole Thriller album.
I used to listen to that. My dad loved that album.
Oh, Lionel Richie, Running with the Night, I think it was, or something. He does the guitar solo. He's worked with everybody.
He's a studio musician.
More than that.
But he does a lot.
He kind of gets a little annoyed because I think people can be haters on there and goes, oh, you know, this is what you do. He's like, sorry for being classically trained and sorry for being so versatile. This guy is one of the best guitarists I've ever seen, heard. One of the great guys. If you've never heard of him, listen to this fascinating interview. He's got a fantastic book called The Gospel According to Luke.
Your ADD is in full force in this episode.
Is it? Why do you say that?
Every time he mentions a song that he wrote, you're like, oh, let's pull this up. Let's listen to it.
We even played a little guitar in it on the episode. I love him. I've seen him perform many times, and so much insight into the music
inside
industry
of Steve.
Let's get insight of Steve Lukather. This is Last Daughter of Krypton on Twitter. Her rendition of Inside of You theme.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Man, look, how long have I known you?
You know, man, that's a good question because how long has it been?
We met at...
You met somebody else. I think you met my kid.
Nope.
Before you met
me. No. We met at something you were doing with all these other 80s bands years ago, and I came there, and we looked at each other, and you're like, hey dude.
I watched your show. I like Smallville. That was a great show.
And then I was like, dude. I'm a huge fan.
It threw me off when you had hairs.
I'm a huge fan of Toto. And that was just kind of like we hit it off. You came over for a beer. I came to see a concert. It was like...
Well, what it must have been long. If I came over for a beer, it was over 10 years ago.
It was over 10 years ago.
I quit drinking 10 years ago.
It was over 10 years ago. It was when I first moved in this house, which I moved 16 years ago.
Then we had a lot of beers then, I bet.
No, you were pretty chill. You weren't like even... I think you were at the end of all that shit.
Whatever. It's my past, but it's still there. You know.
Well, you just wrote... I was surprised because you seem like a real private guy. I don't know you. I know you as in we text funny shit.
Yeah.
We go out to dinner. We talk
shit.
Right,
we hang out, you know.
But we don't sit here and go, hey, man, tell me about growing up.
Something weird was going on when I was really young.
Really?
Weird things outside my window, and my sister and I have weird memories and stuff.
Like what?
I don't know, maybe.
You do
weird
know.
Stuff.
I could see it in your eyes.
I don't know, man, but I have a morbid fascination with UFOs. I'll put it to you that way.
Well, did you see that Bob Lazar and Area 51 and Aliens? Isn't that a great documentary?
Bob, I was into Bob when it hit in the 80s. It's a hobby. I'm not, like, obsessed or anything like that.
I think you are a little bit. I think we all
hobby
are.
In the sense
we all want to know what's out there.
Well, wait a minute. It's very curious. And every day there's more and more weird things they can't explain being disclosure. I mean, it doesn't make mathematically, you know, there's got to be some stuff out there, you know? Then, of course,
absolutely.
The theory of parallel universes and, you know, the Mandela effect and all that.
How that,
because of, you know, as soon as they hit the God particle, boom, we're supposed to all have shifted. And that's why things are weird, little teeny things like lines from a movie or even passages in the Bible have changed.
Well, how
from
could,
way you remember, this is a theory. I'm not.
It's not only a theory, but I mean, how could we think? How
I just go down these. You know, I'm on the road so much. You know, reading books and doing. You know, sitting in a room by myself. I can only practice so much, and then I just want to read and amuse myself with non-musical things. You know, and I find these fascinating little YouTubes that lead me down other wormholes,
little rabbit holes.
Yeah, you know,
I always think of you as someone like. You know, a lot of people, you talk to actors, they like talking about their careers. They'll talk about this, what they're doing. You're the one of those guys where I'm like, God, I hate to ask. I remember one time I asked you, I go, hey, play something. You're like, why don't you act something?
Well.
But it's kind of true.
Well, you know, what if you're a doctor? You go over, every time you go to somebody's pad, man, it's like they want to show you the anal fissure that's growing.
Like, hey, what's this, doc? It's like, I'm off right now.
I've got this boil on my left testicle, and would you have a look for me? I know we're going to have dinner soon, but, you know.
Steve Lukather.
I have to always be on, is my point. You know what I mean?
It's true. But I mean, by the way, Steve Lukather, thank you for allowing me to be inside of you today. This is really exciting.
You're going to have to take me to dinner first.
I'll do that.
And cause me to go off the wagon and feed me full of all sorts of mind altering things so I can never remember anything, any part of it.
You are, for people that don't know you, and look, my fan base, who knows? When people listen to this show,
they're going
to
go, who the hell is that guy?
Well, that's why I want to talk to you as a fly on the wall. Yeah, as like, because I know some stuff. Your book, you didn't want to write a book forever.
No, I was not looking to do that. What happened was I got a call to do a Q&A at the Grammy Museum. Not unlike James Lipton, you know what I mean?
Right.
Scott Goldman, one of the heads of the Grammys down there, really sweet guy, invited me down to do this. I'm like, really? Okay. And it's like, you know, I don't know, 300 people stuffed into a room. I didn't think anybody was going to show up. I'm like, me? Well, who the hell? Who cares? It was packed. And so he did one of those things. He researched my career, and I had no idea what questions he was going to ask. He'd mentioned an artist's name, somebody I worked with, and I have stories about everybody. So I just started telling stories and doing impressions or whatever the hell I was doing. I had everybody screaming, laughing. And my agents from WME came up to me and said, you have to write a book. I go, holy geez, you know. Then it sort of, somebody contacted me and sort of happened organically like that. And I said, I led a very colorful life. I'm not so sure I should talk about all of it. You know what I mean? I don't want to hurt any innocent people.
But let me tell you, when I read the four, because you just sent me the book, and I'm looking at it right now, The Gospel According to Luke, Steve Lukather with Paul
My nickname
Reese.
Is Luke because there was like 40 Steves around when I was a kid. That's why.
Right.
Lukather, Luke, makes sense.
Right. You've done some crazy shit in your life, and that's what this book is like. You even said, this isn't another book where I'm going to tell you about all I do is do drugs, and you're going to hear all these stories about me fucking
tons of people. Well, it's kind of a cliche. Don't you think it's kind of a cliche?
And that's what you say.
You know, it's like, you know, the clawing your way to the, you know, to getting that chance, and you have your hit record, and then everything's great, and then trouble, you know.
But you know what?
The women, the drugs, the booze, the decadence, the craziness. It's your name here at this point, you know. I mean, some of us were worse than others. Some people were just way on another planet from me. You know, I was kind of crazy, but.
I mean,
other people that were really crazy.
I mean, look, you were at 7 years old, your dad gave you like a keyboard or some shit.
No, I mean, I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, and that was it. I wanted to be George Harrison, so I got a guitar and a copy of Meet the Beatles.
And you were playing from seven on?
Well, the first year was a struggle of trying to make something noise out of the thing because it was a painful guitar, which I now have as a lamp in my guest bedroom.
Is that true?
My parents gave it to me on my 21st birthday. No, this was like a mother of toilet seat guitar. I mean, it was a piece of crap, $4 or something at Thrifty.
Right.
Strings are four feet off the neck, and I was trying to make it. Why doesn't it sound like the Beatles? You know, I'm an innocent little kid.
Right.
You know, and then the neighbor kids had a band, and that was an eye-opener. Wow, there's real electric guitars and stuff, so.
Were those the guys that you ended up going to high school with?
No. They were older guys that I've probably never seen since. You know, the one summer they rehearsed in a garage, I sat outside and they let me play their Rickenbacker guitar like George Harrison. It was really thrilling for me.
And you didn't get really interested in music really, really heavily till high school?
No. I was obsessed from day one.
From day one?
I was in a band, my first band at 9, my first money-making band at 11.
How much money are you making? What are you playing? 20, is it a cover band?
$20 a weekend, you know, which would be like making $200 a weekend now. I had a 3-piece band. We played really good. We played a whole bunch of songs from the era. Everything, You know, from Beatles, Cream,
Hendrix. How old are you?
11.
How many 11-year-olds do that?
There weren't any then. Now it's like, you know, that's considered
that's
old.
You get on YouTube, everybody's playing.
You have to pop out, you know, as a fetus with a you know, little mini strat on playing like Stevie Ray Vaughan or shredding like the fastest guitar player in the world at 2 years old.
Were you already getting like
It's crazy, because but there wasn't anybody like that then. Remember, I was living in real time. The Beatles are just... So bands were like, everybody wanted to be in a band, but nobody my age wanted to be in a band. So I was always thrown in with older people, which is how trouble started in my life. You know, you put a little kid in a room with guys like 10 to 20 years old, and later in life as a session musician, but as a kid, I was always guys, you know, 3-4 years older than me. And that's a big difference when you're 9 and everybody else is, you know, preteens or teenagers.
Were you smoking pot at 11?
No.
Were you doing any drugs at in your teens, early teens?
No. Oh, no. Yeah, I did that in my early teens, sure. You know, Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill.
Boone's Farm,
cheap,
dude.
Cheap weed. You know,
you don't know what this is, Rob.
But
Rob's 29. He has a kid. You know, he doesn't know
this. No, but the first time I smoked weed, I got way too high. Or the first time I got high on weed, I tried it a bunch of times. Nothing happened. First time I got way too high, and then I didn't touch it again until I was like 20.
Really?
I experimented with some other stuff, but you know, it was really, and I turned into a boozer at a young age.
Really? Already
like,
boozer?
Well, everybody else would be taking acid, and it was scary stuff to me.
So,
I mean, we were young. I mean, like 13, 14.
Were your parents
kids
pretty liberal? Were they liberal? Did they just not, they just
liberal
like to go do your thing?
Well, innocent, I think. They didn't see it. They didn't, you know, they understand we were the first generation that went for it with all that crazy shit. You know, I mean, before it was just booze for the parents, you know, going back generations, the rite of passage was to go get drunk or whatever. We sort of took it to another level. There was a whole drug, it's, you know, the hippies and all that, and the music was ours.
Were your parents liberal, though? Were they conservative?
Didn't really talk about it much, man. You know,
they just
were
let
like,
you
they
do
were
your
like,
thing?
You know, don't talk politics or religion with the neighbors. And, you know, for 2 weeks a year, it would get a little vibe going in the neighborhood and then it would go away. Not like today where you're pummeled every 2 seconds with, oh my God, can it get any worse? And it does, you know,
right.
Regardless of which side you're on, it's crazy everywhere.
And you were listening to like Hendrix and all that.
Oh, man, everything was in real time. Whatever was new, I was into. And my mom was really young. See, she was a teenager when she was pregnant with me, 19 years old. So she would listen to rock and roll and top 40 radio. So because she was still young, I was just mesmerized by it. And my parents thought it was rather amusing and cute, but didn't think I was going to go the distance. You know?
I mean, do you think you of yourself sort of like, because, you know, I mean, I think musicians are, you meet them, they can be snobs in terms of like what they like, because you're a rock and roller, you rock.
No, I'm a musician, man.
But do
I'm
you
not
like,
a snob at
do you
all.
Like pop shit? Do you yeah. like, I mean, what do you like that people
Wait
would go,
a second,
what?
Man, I'm the least musical snob you've ever heard. I love all sorts of music.
Like what? What's the music that people wouldn't believe that you listen to?
There isn't any music that I wouldn't listen to.
You listen to Joni Mitchell?
I love Joni Mitchell. I had the honor of working with her.
Carole King?
Tapestry. It's part of the DNA, man. One of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Go ahead, Rob.
These are people you're trying to pick that would surprise that he listens to?
I know.
I mean, well, it's I everybody,
like,
man. Ever
it's
since
more like
Taylor Swift.
Taylor
or
Swift?
Justin Bieber.
You know, I gotta be okay. You know,
yeah, thanks, Rob.
You know, I've
thanks,
heard a couple. I've heard a couple of the records, but it's just out of my wheelhouse. It's not that I think it's bad. It's just that it's funny. They tell you by the time you're 30 years old, that's really all the new music you're going to be interested in. And you'll listen to new stuff, but you'll always go back to your youthful music. And that's every generation.
That's what I do. Yeah,
every generation is like that. My older kids, like they're 90s kids. So that's their...
Do they go back to... Trav goes back to like... Pearl Jam, Nirvana,
sure.
Soundgarden.
Sure, he was. Well, I liked all that stuff.
Do you know, you probably know those guys.
Some. I actually met the bass player in Nirvana, Chris, on a Paul Allen's boat.
Who's Paul Allen?
Co-founder of Microsoft.
Oh yeah, that Paul Allen.
Yeah.
Did you know that, Rob?
No.
He's a sweet man. God bless him. I got invited on that cruise, but I ended up playing it privately with Ringo, you know, and we were there, and he was there, so that's how I met this guy. It was a trip. He was such a nice guy. Chris was a great cat, and he told me he played accordion, and he started, and I thought he was taking the piss out of me, so I said, really, man? So, like, how do you, you know, I've always been fascinated with that, playing that instrument. I know everybody gives it a bad name, you know, but there's some badass accordion players. You listen to polka. Some of these cats can rip, man. Rip it.
That's the thing with you. You I love mean, people musicians. Laugh. You love every instrument.
Anybody that's a virtuoso in any style of music, he catches my eye because I know the time, effort, and years. And
can you play anything? Can you play any kind of music?
Well, I could bullshit my way through anything.
You could bullshit your way through any kind of music.
And I underline bullshit because there are people that own every, you know, a certain style of music. I go, yeah, I could kind of fake my way through it. These guys own it. There's a big difference.
Right. But what is the most comfortable you feel on stage? What kind of music you're playing?
I don't know. You've heard my stuff. You know, that's what comes out when I don't think about it too
much. Rock and roll, blues, little jazz.
I started out a rock and roll guy. You know, I studied music when I was 14. From 7 to 14, I played by ear and just rock, basically rock, top 40 of the time. Which, if you really go back and Google the top 40 of, say, 1968, when I was 11 in my band, and see the song list, every song is a classic by today's standards.
Right.
And that was just the top 40 that week. So, I mean, I'm going to be a musical snob and say that I feel like I was lucky enough to grow up in the best time of rock music ever be, because everything was brand new. Is anything brand new anymore?
No.
I mean, is there anything in life, maybe another planet, meeting somebody from another planet, that would be something completely wow. But when was the last time you went, wow?
I don't say
something
wow.
Something is brand. Okay, not the word.
Say wow, but Rob, I think, says wow. Rob likes a lot of current music, and he goes, wow. What wows you, Rob?
I don't say wow about current music.
I don't know. I mean,
well, what's your favorite music, man?
I mean, I like Local Natives, Radiohead, Father John Misty.
Yeah, Radiohead, that's considered classic rock, right?
That's considered classic. That's the 90s.
I love, the record I love, though, there's OK Computer.
Yeah, that was
a genius record. That reminds me of 20 years ago, man, in London. I was working in the UK at the time.
Now, let me ask you. So this book kind of takes you on a journey throughout your life, right? I mean,
it's a broad stroke, man. I mean, there was 400 pages plus that hit the floor because nobody wants to buy a 700-page book on me. They're probably going, who the heck is this guy? You know, it's a cute title. Somebody might pick up the book and go, who the heck is this guy? And maybe get sucked in. Who knows?
Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. This is an amazing platform. I use it on both podcasts. It has worked wonders for me. It's so amazing how easy it is to navigate. If you want to sell products, t-shirts, soap scents, whatever it is, Ryan, you want to sell, this is the way to do it. You could see what your best seller is right there, analytics, how much you're making this month, what products are selling the best. It's really fantastic. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify's there to help you grow.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way.
Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/inside.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories, and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
And that's why I wanted you on the show, because I think people should know you that don't know you, because I think you are truly one of the legends of rock and roll. You are. Dude. And I know you're humble. I know you sit there and go, fuck this, whatever. But people, you have worked with everybody. You have.
I just know where all the bodies are buried. That's all. They have to keep me around.
No, but you're so humble. I see after a concert at the Greek and how you treat people and how you hug people. And you're just a dude. And maybe because you've been through it, maybe in the forward, you say, what an asshole maybe I would have been if I hurt anybody's feelings. I'm sorry because you've been involved as a person.
Nobody's Mr. Happiness all day long. I'm going to give you a great example of this. A lot of people, when they meet somebody that they like or somebody's famous or whatever it is, sports, actors, musicians, whatever that is, people don't realize that everybody has real life. You know what I mean? Like an example is on our very first tour, Toto tour in 1978, we were playing Massey Hall in Canada. Our original bass player, David Hoggett, had just done Brian Adams' first album, Cuts Like a Knife, right? So he came to the show, introduced himself. We're all fans of the guy, you know, but at the time he was just breaking as an artist, and he came to the show and he met David Page. And David apparently blew him off. Like,
your lead singer.
Well, you know, 20 years later, I talked to Brian on the telephone by accident. We were mutual friends. And he said, yeah, man. He goes, you know, you guys were cool and all that, but like, what's up with Paige, man? What kind of an attitude is that? I go, what are you talking about? David's like the nicest man ever on planet Earth. I mean, ever. I mean, never a harsh word. I mean, this is the nicest man I've ever known.
And this was something that happened years ago.
Yeah, and this was like 20, he carried around for 20 years, Paige. And I go, what night was that, Massey Hall? I go, you know, Brian, Dave's mom, Dave came off the stage and found out his mother died. So he probably wasn't in the mood to be high. Nice
isn't that
to meet
something?
You.
People don't know what
David,
someone's
he was just walking
through.
Down the hallway, and Brian goes, hey, man. And David like probably just went like, not now. Brian thought he blew him
that's
off without
perception.
An explanation.
First,
now, you know, sometimes, you know, you're a famous guy. People come up on the street, and sometimes you could be in the middle of crisis on the phone with family or something. And you're
I'm
like,
sorry,
hey,
sorry.
Not now.
Yeah.
And then you're immediately on the internet. You're an asshole.
It doesn't mean anything.
I've seen the new one now. I've seen cats, you know, and I don't look. This is like, I really don't. I have my shrinks. Like, don't look at this stuff. It's like cutting yourself. But, you know, the comment section in anything or, you know, any message board or something is, for guys like us, is bad news, you know?
Yeah.
Brian carried that with him for all these years. And I said to Brian, I said, man, David's mom died that night. And he's like, oh, man. I go, he's a big fan of yours, Brian. Man, you should work with him. He's one of the best musicians I've ever been with in my life. And Brian called him up on the phone and flew him over to France. And he cut the track with Mutt and him. What was it? He's in the video. Dave's in the video. He's in the big Brian.
And now they're buddies.
Please release me or please believe me.
Right.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry, Brian. I'm old. Who are you people?
You've worked with millions.
You're invisible.
You've worked
on
millions of songs. How could you remember everything? You worked with Lionel Richie?
I did. I've worked with Lionel Richie a bunch of times, but I did the solo in Running with the Night, which I was just warming up.
Can you bring that up? You're allowed to play that, Rob?
And I go, he goes, here, we got a track for you. Do a solo on. I go, what key is it? He goes, hey. I go, well, run the track. Let me just warm up and see what it's about. And I play it all over it. And at the end of the take, he goes, that's it. I go, that's it. I go, I was just warming up. What are you talking about? He goes, it's done. You're done. I go, stop. I go, I played way too much. And he goes, nah, I love it. It's great. You're
just
out of here.
Just like that.
I was out of there in fucking 10 minutes session.
How much would they pay you for a session like that?
I don't know, a couple grand. I mean, that was, you know.
1985?
Yeah, it was a couple grand or something like that.
It's the chorus. It's the lead guitar towards the end, right? The bridge?
Well, the whole song.
Well, the whole song, but the big.
Yeah.
Running with the band.
Yeah, that's all, yeah. That was like a zero take because I didn't even know I was being recorded.
If you don't know this song, then
it's an old one, you know. Yeah. It's a classic. You know, I got to play some cool stuff with some great people.
Hang on, let me hear just. When's the last time you heard the song?
A long time. A really long time since I heard this. That's Carlos Rios on there playing the rhythm guitar. He's a great guitar player.
Yeah, that's it. We get about 15 seconds of each song.
Yeah, that's right, because you don't have to pay the ass cat,
you know,
cheap motherfuckers.
You know,
you've already devalued us so badly that we all of us have to spend our lives on the road now. Because
dude,
you can't make a dime on records.
Can't make a dime on records.
A million streams, $6,000 gross for everybody.
So why would anybody
ever involved in the song?
Then why would a musician ever put his music on Spotify?
Because tell me where the local record store is besides Amoeba.
Just put it on iTunes. If they want the song, they pay.
iTunes takes 30% off the top, man.
Great. What's 30% of a dollar that, of their downloads? 70%
it's the
you
same,
make.
It's the same equation. It's just they take more percentage off the top.
No, no, no. You don't get 70 cents to every dollar on Spotify.
If you're, well, no, nobody does. If you're a classic rock act that signed a record in the label, I mean, I went and renegotiated a 50% deal for us for all digital, but Spotify wasn't really big then. So this thing's kind of taken over.
Napster.
It's life's, it's the world's radio station, record store, download. It's the only game in town.
Right.
And there's nothing to fight. We can't fight it. It just is. So what's going to happen, sadly, is people are going to stop making albums. They'll make a track. You'll cut a tune.
That's just
it. I mean, you're
too
assuming
much work
you're
to make an album,
well,
right?
No, you're assuming people have the time to sit down for 45 minutes and listen to your music, you know, without interruption like we did as kids. Nobody would do that. Not one person that's young will do that now.
But people had no choice then, which was great. Well, they had to buy an album.
No, because music, but music was everything for us. We didn't have, you know, cell phones and computer games. It was like we either played the music or listened to it. We were all shitty at sports. We weren't like you. We were out.
Look at me. I had neck surgeries. That's
yeah,
fine.
And yeah, because you're constantly putting yourself in harm's way.
But you suffer too. We just talked about
this.
Well,
yeah, but I was in a tour bus accident doing my job.
Tour bus accident, but you hold guitars your whole life. You're always doing. You probably have a lot of shit going on with you.
After the accident, I had to take pain meds for a while because I was on the road. So. Yeah. I had to get off that stuff.
What are you taking? I take Norcos for
neck. Yeah, that's
it. Kind of makes you a little cloudy, but it does make you feel good.
If you for the first week it does, and then after a while you get used to it, and then your stomach starts going, "Hey, man,"
and
that's bad,
shit, bro.
That's bad. So I mean, you know, I was under doctor's care. I didn't like go out in the street and do this. I mean, I was like, you know, you got to do this. I had to finish a tour. I had no choice.
Yeah. Well, we listened. We jumped the gun.
But you know, in truth, I mean, that drug's a lie. And any marijuana products, the CBD balms are absolutely essential to my life.
All right. Well,
and you know, and you have some, and it actually helped.
Honest hemp. It did. I just gave you some of this.
I
use
know.
This every
and
day.
Both my right shoulder went because I was leaning on that for a couple of years because my left shoulder was toast. Finally, it gave out. So. This one hurts more than the left one. No, maybe in a minute.
Just put it on. Go ahead.
But you know, the other thing was, you know, if I do take the Indica muscle relaxer as opposed to the head high, because that
can't function.
I don't want to be like, you know, Snoop Dogg 24 hours a day. As much as I love him, who doesn't love Snoop
Dogg? Who doesn't
love
Snoop Dogg?
That's a guy that you want to hang out with.
Well, he's so high, he's on another planet that you just can't be on that planet with him.
He's like the hip. He's like, you know. When we were young, it was Miles Davis or Billy Gibbons. It was like, these are the two hippest people I've ever, you know, been around. They look cool. The way they cared, they talked, the way they cared. Their music is cool. Everything about it. They dress cool.
Yo, Steve, grab that CBD.
You know,
marijuana, more for me.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
What do you think, Rob?
That's great.
Thanks.
That's pretty good.
Hey, dude, we skipped over
we're
something.
We're not paying you ASCAP either. Okay?
Kiss my ASCAP. Listen, in the book, I know we go over stuff, but like a lot of people don't know... How many people get together with someone in high school and stay with them for you their whole life? A band. You guys met at a high school in Burbank?
No, it was actually
an art
Sherman
school?
Oaks, Grant High School in the Valley, you know, 73, 74.
And these guys were older than you?
No, I met Steve Picaro, who was in the same grade as me. Me and my buddy Michael Landau, famous guitar player.
Right.
Who we've been playing with together and been friends since we were 12 years old. But we went to Grant High School, and we heard about this guy, Steve Picaro, had this killer band. His brother was in Steely Dan. Blah,
Jeff
blah,
Picaro.
Blah. Yeah. Jeff right. was in Steely Dan when we were in high school.
And then Mike
was playing with Seals and Crofts at the time. He was a music family.
And
was
David
like,
Page
wow.
was there as well.
Page and Jeff were best friends. And they were working with Jeff would work with Steely Dan, then he worked with Seals and Crofts. And
how old
then,
was he when he's working with these guys?
He, at the time, was probably about 18. We were 15, 16, so you'd have been 18, 19, him and David.
This is ridiculous. I was shitting my pants. I had no hair in my balls at that age, and you guys are all playing together, and he's playing with Steely Dan, and like, this is an anomaly. This shit doesn't happen.
Well, this, you know, we didn't play sports, bro. We were the geeks that practiced our instruments.
And you guys, I mean...
You know, it wasn't like really super cool to be a musician back then.
But you all were so good
it was,
at what you did. That's
was
rare.
Rock music was still... rebellious. Now everybody's mother and grandmother listen to rock and roll, so it doesn't have the cultural impact that it did to my generation.
Right.
Who watched the Beatles like aliens landed from the planet Zolar or something like that, you know, and then carried it every day exponentially in real time to present day musically.
Did you think you were trying to, in the beginning, trying to emulate some bands that you liked? Did you think people have a propensity?
I just wanted to make noise on this guitar that sounded like something that resembled what I heard on the record or radio.
And at this time, you knew all the chords.
No, I mean, I was a sponge. I mean, I was struggling with it for a while. Nobody just picks it up and goes. But if you read the book, you'll hear the funny story about my grandmother, who was pretty new agey for late 50s, you know. In the late 50s, that goes to show how freaking old I am. My mother was 19, pregnant, and my grandmother's mom, has these like psychic friends over, which is considered super taboo at the time, you know. And one of them put her hand on my mom's belly and said, "Oh, it's a boy. I hear a lot of music. A musician.
He's gonna small
be a,
dick.
He's going to be a musician. Small dick, yeah."
I had to throw it at you. Come on, man.
Small dick jokes are like fart jokes. They're always funny. Even as tired as they
are. You send them to me all the time.
Yeah.
I get them from you when you're playing over in Australia.
Well, my other theory is, you know, I never had to really grow up. Most people, why should you? Adolescent, and you're always in all adolescents from ages 12 to 18 are idiots, pretty much, yeah. Right? Whatever you're into. But see that. Then they go to college, you have to grow up, and then you're going to get a job and get married and do the whole thing. I just skated right through that part where you had to grow up and get it together, and I went right on the road to present day. So my sense of humor sort of stayed about 16, 17.
Now, let me ask you. So when was it where all the guys, because they asked you to join a band. Let's come in with...
Well, we had a high school band. Dave and Jeff had a high school band, and Steve Picaro took over the high school band, and me and Mike joined that with our buddy John Pierce. From Huey's band. Huey's, you know, who was my first childhood friend ever in life.
Huey Lewis?
Yeah.
Who was he in Huey
John
Lewis?
Pierce, bass player.
Wow. That's how Toto began. Yeah, ultimately, all
Steve
you Bacall, guys.
Carlos Vega, me, and then Jeff and Dave would come down and play with us. And we had some great singers. And
you started playing out, and you started noticing.
All over the valley.
Where people going, these guys are fucking good.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was no DJs back then. It was like they wanted real live music, and they wanted people who could make it sound like the record. And we could do that. We were basically a Steely tribute band. In high school, we did all sorts of weird music. We didn't just do top 40 music.
Well, who said, hey, let's do our own shit? Who said, let's come up with a song?
Well, that was later. I mean, after, you know, when Dave and Jeff did the Boss Gag Silk Degrees record, which was huge with Lowdown and Lido and all this, Pitch wrote those songs with Boz and
Jesus.
Jeff played. And then Steve Picaro and I joined the tour because we were just out of high school. Steve was coming from Gary Wright. And I was just
Gary Wright sang the famous song, a couple of them.
Yeah, he did that tour.
What was the
song? Dreamweaver.
Dreamweaver, you know Dreamweaver,
Love
right?
Is Alive and all that stuff. That when those records
Your
really
love is,
yep. actually came out, Steve was left school to play Moog bass with live with Gary Wright. Did the Frampton Jesus. Yes tour, the stadiums and all. He was 17
How old?
At the
17.
Time. Yeah, so it's right from there for Boz. I joined Boz band halfway through the Boz tour, Sony or what was then Columbia Records. Heard that Dave and Jeff were putting a band together and we were going to be in it. And they offered us the big deal without hearing a note.
That was Toto.
And that was the first album. We did four demos, which ended up, none of the songs ended up on the first album. They ended up on this Toto 20 record and we did some re-records of a couple things. But
And what year is this?
Heard the music.
This 79?
76, 77. June 9th, 77. Was the first time I played on a track with Jeff and Dave. I remember the day because when I did the book, I did the research and I had all my old date books. I've kept every year at a glance date book since 1974.
Did you ever, when you go back, did you ever have tear up and like get emotional?
Sure,
a
man.
Lot during writing this book?
There are people that aren't here anymore. Way too many.
A lot of people.
I've lost
a lot of your close friends.
74 people, 75 people in the last 2 years. Two of my best friends. A lot of musical colleagues, a lot of family, a lot of old friends, some people just get sick, man. I'm at the age now where, you know, it's not just about having a cold or a sore throat anymore, man. No. Now it's, you hear the word procedure. Sphincter tightening words like procedure and tests. You'll have to come in and we'll have to have a look at that. I'm going to take this off you and send
it
away.
Mr. Lucas.
No, I was just at I'm so paranoid. I go to the doctor every 2 months, man. I was as healthy as I am now. I did beat up the frame.
You look good. How old are you?
I'm 61. I'll be 5 months. I'll be 62. Oh,
oh man.
Ouch. How did that happen?
You're all right. You're all right.
I used to be the youngest guy in the room. I don't know what happened.
But, you know, you're right. Because I remember, like, a couple concerts. What's amazing to me is you don't, you're one of those guys who don't forget. You don't forget those people in your life that touch you. Because you're playing at the Greek, I think, or the Hollywood Bowl or something. And you get on stage and you say, you start talking about Jeff Porcaro. And you start talking about him, and I feel
and Mike,
and I'm looking at you, and I'm like, it feels like it just happened, like the way you're emoting, like,
you know, I'll put it to you really simply, and anybody that's ever lost anybody that they love, which is probably everybody, that loss, you know, you learn to accept it, but there's always going to be a hole where that person used to be. And as you get older, the holes are more, and that's why older people sometimes look sad because they don't have their friends are all gone. That's it being I think it's weird now that some of my friends are dropping. I don't mean to throw that away, you know, they're passing away. But imagine being 80 years old, looking around the room going, am I the last man standing?
Aging's not for the faint of heart. I mean, it's just,
you know what I mean? Know. And you know, I know people that are 80 years old. I mean, Jesus, Ringo's 79 in a month.
Jesus,
I just, you know. And I adore that man, you know, and he's as healthy as you can be. And he could see 100. I wouldn't be surprised. I put money on it. The way he lives, the way he eats and relaxed, and he's just his whole, hey, you know, the way he lives his life. It's an inspiration, actually.
Yeah, he just keeps going. I don't know how he does it because I feel sometimes I'm like almost 47. I'm like, I don't want to go take a weekend trip to fucking Orlando.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, you're an actor. I'm a musician. I mean, I'm never going to stop playing. You know, people who say, when are you going to retire? Retire and do what? Watch TV, scratch my nutsack?
You'll play till the very end?
Yeah, well, what else am I supposed
there's
to
guitar,
do? I
mean, you know, there's a guitar right there.
I think the touring would slow down. I mean, I'm doing a lot of it now because that's how we do it. I think I'd always want to go out and play live. I think what I'd do is probably just trim it back to, like, you know, they always say, when I get older, maybe I might want to live in Italy overlooking the ocean, you know? Change of life. Just completely go left field. When my little kids get older.
How many do you have? Four?
I have four. I have two grown, wonderful kids. Tina, 34, living in Vegas, married, wonderful kid.
Your granddad?
Yeah, well, I could do that. I'm kind of hoping to, you know, that's one of the things I've yet to experience in this life. Listen, man, when it's my time, I can't be mad at anybody. I've had the most amazing life. Like, I put like 3-4 lives into this one. You know, some of it was a little dark and weird, but most of it was great.
Do you get anxiety?
Yeah, terribly.
Do you get anxiety before you go on stage?
Well, I didn't used to, but when I stopped drinking, I found out that helped quell the anxiety.
When you say drinking before you go on stage,
I was just shit faced. But
would you have 3 or 4 beers?
No, through the course of the evening, you know, it got bad, and I had some really shameful shows.
Shameful shows where you can't even play.
Well, just played sloppy and shitty, and then
noticeably,
unfortunately, thanks to the miracles of YouTube, I get to relive watching myself fall down the stairs and compound fractures and teeth missing and eyeballs out.
You could watch that on YouTube.
Well, metaphorically speaking, you know what I mean? I know I was sick. I was sick. I fucked up. I'm sorry. I mean, I got off the track, man. But I'm back on the track, and I have been for 10 years. But there was a dark period. There was a good decade in there that was, I just was so unhappy with everything in my life, and it's hard to explain. I was trying to put a fire out and drown something that it was.
What was it?
That I couldn't, it was my personal life. It was everything in my personal life.
But what was causing that?
You know, my mother was dying, my marriage was dying, and I was having a baby, which surprised me. My band was in shambles, you know, we were falling apart.
Were you fighting all the time?
It was more like, you know, Bobby wasn't singing, it was terrible at the time, poor guy, he was struggling, and I was just going, I'm looking around the stage, look, where are my original high school brothers? A great band we had, incredible player, all my friends, love them all. But the original thing, you know, where are my high school brothers? They were all gone. And I realized that I just was in a bad place in my life, and I had to pull the plug. Because I was hurting myself and hurting people around me and embarrassing myself as a musician. Not all the time, but I had some bad nights, you know, and those are the ones that get all the attention.
And what year, so you're talking about when you quit Toto?
I don't want to put everybody on it, you know what I mean? It's just, you know, I just assume forget it. And some people on the internet, you go, you know, I have my sister go, hey, man, can you take that down? The kid, you're kicking a man when he's down. And they go, no, man, I got too many hits. I'm making money off him. Fuck him. They don't care about me. They don't care about anybody. You know, I'm not the only one. There's other guys from my generation who went off the railers for a while.
Many.
You know, and funny, we all quit about the same time, and they're all my friends, and they're all famous people that you know.
Sure.
That had a reputation of being the wild boys, drinking and carousing and all the rest of it, you know? And it was fun for a minute, but then it became silly. We got a little older, and it wasn't funny. It was sort of like, oh, my God, really? This guy's still at it, you know?
Were you ever at the moment where you're like, I don't even want to be here. I want to drive my car off a fucking cliff.
Yeah, I've been there. I would never do it because I have children, but, I mean, you know, you get to a point where you're bullied, you know? I was bullied my whole life since I was a little
bullied?
Kid. Yeah, just bullied by the press, bullied by people. I was always on the defensive because everybody was beating us up so time. I just assumed everybody was coming at me all the time.
Yeah.
Bad reviews, you know.
See, this is what pisses
all
me off.
People beating you up, and then I get older, and then the internet kicks in, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's not just one critic in every town. Everybody's a critic.
Well, here's what I don't
playing field, you
Steve,
know?
Steve, I look at this book, and what I gather, too, from this book is how much I can see that hurts you where it's like, look, you say.
Hey, whoa, but let me bookend that with, I've also had the best career
I know,
ever.
I know.
I'm not complaining.
No,
I'm not going, oh, woe is me. Oh, poor little Stevie.
No.
I'm just saying, historically, anybody would go, no, these guys got beat up real bad.
Right, but what bothers me when I read this and what bothers you.
I don't care anymore, but is, it's, you know.
But hang on. But you were trained musicians. You were studio musicians who knew how to play music, who could play with anybody, who could walk in and play whatever anybody wanted.
Well,
and you were getting put down because you were that good. That's essentially what it is.
Well, no, I was working on a Cheap Trick record, Dream Police. And Bunny goes to me, goes, you guys aren't a real band. And I go, what are you talking about?
He said, Toto's not a real band.
Yeah, I go, well, we went to high school together. I don't know how much more real of a band we could be. Hell, you're all studio guys. Like, people throw that around like it's a bad thing. Like,
anybody
could do that. It's like, I don't think so, man. It was a different skill set. We didn't just sit there and read dots on a paper and read music that was already written for us. We'd get a sketch with a bunch of chord symbols on it. They count off the song. No rehearsal, no idea what we were going to do that day, no idea what style we were going to play, who we were going to play with. Sometimes we didn't even know who the artist was or anything. So we had to be ready for anything. We had to create and arrange these parts on the spot.
Example. Quick examples. Boom, boom. Let's hear it.
Mike McDonald. Keep forgetting. Take two. That's the record.
Take two is the record.
Yeah. Take one.
I'm not in love.
We were just jamming. Michael, when we got there, goes, we're going to cut this song right now. And he starts playing the Rhodes and singing the song. And then Jeff Picaro starts playing that groove. I believe Louis Johnson played bass, and we were just vamping on the intro. And then I came up, I started playing that. First take. That wasn't written. None of this part was written. And then everybody's going, it was Teddy Templeman was producing. The guy did Van Halen. And I believe Lenny Warnker, another famous producer.
Well, I'll play that.
And then Michael's, you know, then we started playing it. We figured out a couple chords. What's that part? And then figured out a little part, and then they cut it, and we got the second take. Was it
just like that?
Lots of stuff like
and
that.
And do they pay your agents, or they just give you a wad of cash?
By today's standards, we'd get songwriters for that, but not back then. It was just considered arranged. They'd hire the best studio guys to bring all of their ideas for arrangements, which is now called songwriting. Now back then, it was just adding flair to a song that had simple chords, adding hooky parts and stuff, little things, ear candy. That's what we got hired to
do. Were you excited?
We did that every day for, you know, 25 times a week.
And you became friends with Michael McDonald pretty much after that because
we knew Michael in school. I didn't know him because he was the Steely Dan with Jeff.
Right.
Before the Doobie Brothers, before any of his success. Like
Pig!
That. Well, at one point, he was asked to be a singer in our band.
Really?
You just joined the Doobies.
Could you imagine?
It would have been a much different band.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
It would have been. It could happen.
Meet you all the way.
Well, he's done that. And we've toured together. I mean, we're dear friends.
Well, you wrote a song.
I adore Michael and his wife Amy so much.
You wrote, as soon as my heart stops.
Yeah.
And he's back up there. Star starts breaking.
Yeah. He's in the video, too.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you guys worked a lot. All right, so give me another session. Another cool set. People love this shit. And Rob's going to play this, a little lick of it. Another session, you just walked in and boom.
They were all like that. I mean, we were expected to perform instantly.
No rehearsal. You just went in there and did it.
No idea.
How does someone not respect someone who could do that?
Well, and this is before the machines came in. You know, once people started, the machines came in, then people could make demos at home. Then it became the horror of beat the demo. Or, you know, that doesn't sound like the demo, man. Can you just play the demo again? Can you get that? See the way you're playing that part? And it's like, demo-itis was the worst thing in the world. It was much easier to do it when there was just a guy playing a guitar or a piano going, here's my song.
Right.
But when they start bringing in completely produced demos, they're going, why don't you just use that if you like it so much? But the quality wasn't quite there. Now with Pro Tools, there's no such thing as a demo. You get a vibe on there and you just start overdubbing on it and it becomes the record. Against that quality. Yeah. So there's a lot of pluses and minuses. On the other hand, it's too easy. You could take your dog barking and turn him into a Mariah Carey record. You know what I mean? There's a lot of tricks of the trade. The richest guy in town now is the guys that do the Pro Tools editing for vocals. Here, tune this vocal, tune this. So, you know.
None of that.
We had none of that. You can't even know we had to play. Hey, the Beatles cut their first album in 2 days. Side one, side two. Thanks, next. All those great Phil Spector records, you know, You Lost That Love and Feeling. Cut on Friday, on the radio Monday. That was the record. When they said, let's hear that back, that's the record. So, I mean, now it's like you got 100 billion tracks.
What's the most magical moment where you guys are laying down a song and just magic came out and you hit it right away and you're like, this is fucking a gold.
Well, there was a lot of moments like that, actually. But one that sticks out is Rosanna. That just really fell into place. It was like, that was another take two. First one.
Take two?
Yeah,
but you had rehearsed it a lot.
We'd never rehearsed the song until the day we cut it. We never rehearsed our record. We just show up and go, who's got a tongue? That was how we made all the first.
That's how you made your albums?
The first 10 records were like that.
Wait.
Everybody wrote songs and stuff like that. David was the primary songwriter at first. He was so good, we just didn't even want to talk. But he would encourage us, come on, guys, start bringing some stuff in. And he'd hear us playing at the piano on a break or something like that, or... You know, he'd go, I love that. Finish that. You know what I mean? And so David was really nurturing to all of us, and including Jeff. And, you know, let's bring everybody into writing songs.
Right.
So, and by the Total 4 album, we started filling our oats. Like everybody is a writer. Like we would put our toe in the water. We're getting our songs on records, you know? So David was our hero and he was encouraging us and teaching us and mentoring us into stepping up our game. And that's when Total 4 is when it sort of all clicked. For us, you know, the first Jesus. Album was like, wow, we get to make a record. The other two, we were trying to find our sea legs. We want to be this. We started reading our own bad press and getting paranoid and tried to be something we weren't, or veered away from what people liked about us in the first place. And when we came back to it on Total 4, once we said, stop trying to be what we think we're going to be, or, you know, we're just going to be ourselves. And the record company goes, you better deliver, otherwise you're done. That was rather
really. That's how they were.
Oh yeah, I mean, you'd be very inspired when you realize that, like, you know, you may lose the dream. You know,
I just can't even imagine going in and not having songs really prepared.
We never did.
Never.
The only thing we did is when the machines kicked in, we started working with outside writers. I'd bring in a pretty polished demo. Some Jeff would go, why don't I just put that on the 24 track and let me play drums to that. Well, yeah,
it just starts with a beat.
Well, the original groove is the Bo Diddley groove, not this.
Really?
Dave started like that. And Jeff goes, no, 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 no. We were listening to Fool in the Rain and Babylon Sisters. Jeff goes, no, this is what... This is where it should be. And he came up with that groove, and we all just jumped in, started jamming on it, and then... Wait, let's write down the chords and get it right. So we made a little chord sheet, and then we started.
How fun was this? Was you having a great time?
Back then, you know, we weren't married. We were just living in the studio, doing sessions and making our own records, and everybody was hanging out. All the studios were buzzing. Like Van Halen would be in Studio 1, we were in the 2.
And you knew Eddie, you worked with him.
Yeah. No, we've been friends forever. But every city we were in, we knew everybody, and the artists would come in to be commingling. We'd hang out in the group area, or whatever. You'd see everybody party with them, come in and dig our record, come in, we'll come dig yours. There was a camaraderie. It was kind of cool.
This one kind of just came out. Was this?
Yeah. I remember when Dave played that for me in his apartment in Westwood before the first album came out. He had a spin at piano. He's going, I got this new tune. invited us all up. And we said, "Wow, that's you got some shit there, man."
And you just came up with that, bam.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was like, I you know, trying to rock everything up, you know.
Always, were they ever like, hey, can you just rock a little down?
No.
Were they ever have to dial you down?
I mean, look at everybody brought something different to the band, which made it collectively when we play together make that noise, you know. Because of the different musical influence of each individual musician and stuff like that. You know, I was the guy that wanted to turn everything on 11. Jeff and Hungary were the groove guys, you know. Paige wanted to be Elton. And Steve wanted to be Keith Emerson, the mad scientist.
But how do you
and
all come together?
And we had Kimball who wanted to be Ray Charles. So we put that in a big musical gumbo and never talk about it.
It seems like you had to fight because you all wanted different things.
No, man, we didn't want to work that hard. We want to get it done quick.
This is, some people say, one of the best songs ever. One of the best songs ever. You play a million times, you know this song. How did this come about?
Well, it was a production experiment, you know what I mean?
Really?
You're going to have to pay for this now, you know that. But I'm not going to make any money, so I don't care.
No, we only pay 10 seconds of it.
No. You guys kill me. It was, they had just gotten, Steve Picaro and David Page were working in R&D with Yamaha. They had to sign non-disclosure lab coats and all that crap back right. In the late 70s, early 80s. And they were making the GS1 and the CS80, their top of the line new synthesizer keyboards that no one's heard of. And it had Kalimba sounds and all these wacky sounds that inspired Dave to come up with the initial part of Africa, the riff. And he started playing the riff. And we're going, man, that's really, and singing before lyrics, singing the melodies. We're going, that's a killer, man. That's catchy as fuck. We should cut that. And then Jeff goes, yeah, but let's do it differently. Let's do loops and stuff, like, you know.
What's that mean?
Drum loops. And then we'd really make, like, it's old school electronic music. He'd go out, and we're working with Al Schmidt, legendary Grammy Award winning, you know, producer, engineer. Legendary. I mean, he knew how to do all this stuff. We wanted to, you know, we heard about the Beatles doing stuff or Pink Floyd doing stuff. We wanted to do stuff like our heroes, you know.
You were 22 when this came out?
I was 23, 24 when I did that record. Jeff went out and said, I'm going to play for a minute, just record. I'm going to pick one or two bars that feels good, and then we're going to overdub on that. So he just went out and started playing the groove. Dave was playing a rough keyboard part, and Jeff goes, okay, let's use this bar. And then they cut the tape. They recorded on a half-inch machine, and he took that, and they cut it and then edited it together so that it would be an endless loop of just Jeff playing the groove. And if you hear the record, you can hear there's one bar that keeps going. Then we're all playing to that and overdubbing to that. And so then Dave went out and got his main keyboard part out there, played the CS80, which is the part that's the intro of the song, that weird keyboard sound. Well, not weird keyboard. It's a very unique. When people hear it, they go, oh, yeah, that song. And they cut that. Then he put a piano part on it. Then Hungay put a bass part on it. Then I started putting a ton of acoustic guitars, electric guitars on it. And then Jeff called his father, Joe, and Emil Richards, very famous percussionist, to bring down all the African weird percussion. And actually, they did that before we started putting all the rest of the stuff on there, and they made it all. Built this whole percussion thing. We filled up four 24 tracks with stuff, you know.
Jesus.
And I think it was the first mix to sync up four 24-track machines. They had a guy with the lab coats in there, you know, they're looking at everything, and it took a while for it all to sync up. This was like 1981, so it was pretty heady tech stuff.
Did you know something was really special?
Well, no, the thing was, we cut this track, and then Dave and Jeff went away with the lyrics. You know, Dave he came back with the lyrics, and we started cracking up, going like, Dave,
what?
Africa?
What does this mean?
Serengeti?
You bless the rains?
Yeah, Dave, are you Jesus? Are you blessing the rains? And we kind of cartooned on it, and we thought, oh, God.
The wild dogs cry out in the night?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going, we were cracking. I go, this song's a hit. I'll run naked on Hollywood Boulevard. I go, it's a great track. It's a great exercise in production. There's some hooky parts, but this is never going to be a hit record. So we'll just bury it and put it as the last song on the whole album. And now, who knew it would turn into what it did? I mean, it was big back then. It was the number one record.
Oh, my God.
Won the Grammys and all
that. I remember 1982 going to Westlake with my family and friends. That song was that year, the whole year. That's all you ever heard. You won a Grammy for that.
Yeah.
You won 5 Grammys, right, in your life?
Well, I think it was, well, if you count all of them, then it was like 9
But who's counting?
I won one for writing Turn Your
Love Around for George Benson.
Yeah. I co-wrote that with Jay Graydon and Bill Champlin.
What about from Chicago? Bill Champlin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Originally from the Sons of Champlin.
Ah, yes. And then you also wrote The Tube, She's a Beauty, co-wrote?
With David Foster and Fee Wabel, yeah. Talk to you later, too.
Jesus.
I got played on all that stuff, too.
I mean, you really could have. You say you're going to play till the end, but you could have retired 20 years ago. You've done so much. It's like, if I did one-tenth as much as you did, I'd be like, God, I'm a legend.
Yeah, but what am I supposed to do with my life? I mean, I retired from being a
Disney
session
World?
Guy. I haven't been a session guy in 25 years.
Would you still do it?
Occasionally, somebody that a friend or somebody really cool calls me on the phone and go, I'll do a solo. I'll show up. And, oh,
do you charge?
I just did something for Edgar Winter.
Do you charge for solo still, for a session?
Well, I mean, I go pay me whatever you want. If I decide to do it,
like
I go, pay me what you pay everybody
if
else.
If a good buddy says, hey, man, can you come in for 2 hours for $5,000?
No, I mean, I wouldn't take any money from a great buddy. I mean, not to say that these people aren't great buddies, but if everybody's getting paid, you got to pay me too. So I just go, pay me what you're paying everybody else. That's cool. Favorite Nation's
Rob?
Deal.
He's waiting to ask you to come play.
No.
He's waiting to ask you to come play on his.
No. I have an album's done. It's not good enough.
Oh, you made a record?
Yeah, I made an album. I always wanted to. I said, fuck it. I made an album.
I would have played on your record because you're my friend. I would have done it for nothing.
Well, I didn't say it was mastered yet.
I'm busy right now. Catch me on the next one.
You're always busy. You're the busiest fucking guy I've ever met in my life. You're always on tour. You're always doing something. You're a good dad. You're a good family man.
I have a lot of...
your son, is a great kid.
Yeah,
I love that guy.
He's a great kid.
He comes over, gives me a big kiss in the lips when I see him.
He's doing really well. Actually, his band's going to open
so good.
10
what's
shows.
What's the band?
ZFG. Zero Fucks Given is what it stands for.
Zero Fucks Given.
It's him and Mike Porcaro's son, Sam. Josh Devine from One Direction on drums, killer. Jules Galley, this kid singer, is an unbelievable singer. And they all have the look. They're young, skinny little dudes.
Does he ask you for advice ever? Does he ever say, Dad, what do you think of this?
Occasionally.
Dad, can you help me out with this?
You know, I'm his father. He's also my best friend, you know? I mean, he's 32 years old now. It's not like he's my bud, man, you know? I think he was my dad in a past life. He's much wiser.
Does he tell you?
He skipped all the bullshit I went through and went right to being a responsible
Does he call
person.
You on bullshit?
Yeah.
Does he say, Dad, fuck off, you're lying?
Yeah, sometimes. I don't always agree with him, but sometimes he's right.
Hey, listen, I know you gotta get out of here. I could talk to you forever. But listen, man, this is fucking, Rob, isn't this great? This is so interesting because we never have musicians really in here. Who have we had? Not many musicians.
Oh, really? Okay. I like that. I like that.
You're like really the first. We had like a younger musician, Andrew McCann.
McMahon,
who's great. He was fantastic.
Guitar player, right?
Keyboard player.
Okay, he's a different guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but he was fantastic. But like having you in here, a legendary. To me, you're a rock star. So,
no, I'm just your guy next door that plays guitar.
You really are just a guy, but you happen to be a really good guy and a good guitarist.
Thank you. You're very kind.
Anyway,
thanks to your audience for putting up with my nonsense.
Now, tell me about, let's just jump into this because people want to hear this, the Thriller album. Because, I mean, that's like you've talked about it a million times.
Yeah.
It's in your book.
Well, yeah.
You could read all this in his book.
Well, of course, it's probably the most famous record I played on. Yeah.
Most famous record. Were you excited? Do you get starstruck even back then when you were meeting people?
Oh, man, we got the call. I mean, I'd been working with Quincy. I did the whole Dude album, you know, all that Just Once and all those.
Wait, Just Once, James Ingram?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You worked on Just Once.
Yeah.
Can we find a way?
I did that whole album, A Thousand Ways and all that shit.
100 Ways?
Yeah, it's all me, man. All that whole era, Patty Austin, all those great
what?
Stuff. Yeah. I did all that stuff. And then from that, you know, Quincy was going to make the night. You know, it was Off the Wall was huge. Steve Picaro worked on that. And David Foster introduced me to Quincy. And then Quincy took a shine to me, him and Bruce Swedeen. I adored these guys. They treated me like a king, man. They were great. And then, you know, being mentored by Quincy at the time, I was 23 years old, 22. And they took me in, took a shine to a little white boy from North Hollywood, you know. And I was Rod Temperton, man, you know, learning his whole. He had a really unique way of making records. And Rod wrote a lot of the stuff on Off the Wall, and he was going to be writing with Michael for Thriller. So they said, well, we want you on. I said, Q's like, I want you on a bunch of this stuff.
You, Jeff, Page.
Well, you know, he said mostly to me, but the first call we got was to do Paul McCartney, Michael Jackson duet. That was the first track cut for the whole album.
The Girl Is Mine.
Yeah. We got the call to do this, so we were really excited. And Paul McCartney, I get to meet my first Beatle. Paul McCartney, are you kidding me? Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson. I mean, there wasn't a bigger session to be had.
What's the first thing you said to Paul McCartney? What's the first thing he said to you?
I think I was probably just like
enamored,
remembering to breathe because I probably couldn't. And he was so, but him and Linda strolled in, and she was so lovely and Linda so wonderful.
Oh.
And they made us feel at ease. I mean, of course, we must have looked like, you know, like if from his point of view, he walked in the room and there's Paige, me, Steve, and, you know, the cats that were on the right, Lewis Johnson, and all the JR. No, it was Jeff McCarl. And, you know, we just look at these, you know, we just, the God just walked into
the room.
Didn't
he say something like,
I mean, we must have looked like we saw, like, you know, just the, like the
Jesus.
The look, we all like flash frozen. Oh my God, like we met Santa Claus. He's real.
Didn't he say to you, he goes, I smell marijuana. Must be musicians.
No, that was later.
That was later.
We cut the track. We worked for, you know.
You worked and then
we worked and we were just getting, you know, poking at each other. And we started jamming on I Was Made to Love Her, that Stevie Wonder song, and Paul and Michael and the Phones, and we were jamming. It was killing. Made everybody feel at ease. And then, you know, we played the track and nailed it real fast. And after, there was 100 people in the room. There was all sorts of weird, Dick Clark and child stars. And Michael was carrying around Emmanuel Lewis like a ventriloquist, you know, the Webster. He had like a ventriloquist dummy. He was just hanging over his arm, walking around.
You're just hanging out.
His Webster, man. He's carrying Webster around. And we're all in the you know, and there's the control room with all the, you know, menagerie. And then there was us out in the control room, out in the studio, with the gear and just sitting around, you know, through smoking cigarettes or whatever. And, you know, I think we got the track and Jeff sparked up a joint. And then all of a sudden, Paul and Linda in the room were going, uh-oh. And Paul goes, I smell musicians. You know? And that totally broke the ice. And him and Linda, we got this great moment where Quincy and everybody, Michael, were all in the control booth doing all the crazy stuff for the press and all that because it was a big deal. It was a very private, super high security thing. And we were just out there goofing off, being ourselves. And he came out and hung out with us. We were around the piano. And he started telling us some Beatles stories and stuff like that. And he took us, he really liked the experience. And he invited Jeff and I to come to, you know, London and work with him in his movie. And, you know, we got to hang, you know. That's where we met George Martin and Jeff Emmerich. And we spent 2 weeks with those guys. It's all in the book. It's a great story. It's a long one. But, I mean, he was my first Beatle I'd ever got to meet.
Did you enjoy working with Michael?
Yeah, Michael was great to me. I did all the stuff on Beat It. That's all me except for the solo. I played all the guitar parts and the bass part. And Eddie played the solo. Eddie played the solo. I played all all that stuff. I came up with the back half of that part. But no, that was great. And then we did Human Nature was basically a Toto song. Steve Pacall wrote the song. That's all I was playing. That's another example of just the song had no guitar when Quincy and Michael cut it. And Quincy calls me and goes, you got to make this song funky for me, man. It's not funky enough for Michael.
Human Nature needed to be funky?
Well, you know, it didn't have the guitar part that's on there right now. That's a kind of glue for the whole song.
Right.
And there was just whole notes. Quincy goes, you know, do you got something for me, man? I need your help here. And I came up with that part on the spot. And then I double tracked it. And that's the record that you hear now. Ironically, when Steve Pacall heard my part, he hated my guitar part because he'd never heard guitar on the song at all. And then I put that. It's a very quirky, weird sound. It was a guitar, Schecter guitar plugged direct into the Harrison console with a little bit of harmonizer, and I double tracked it, so it has this weird, unique guitar sound you never heard on anything else because it was just one day. It wasn't like you press a button, you can have that sound. We actually created that sound from nothing.
What would you change anything about the life you've led, life you've had, the shit you've done?
Sure, man, I would.
What would you change?
Not a lot of it. I the mistakes. You know.
But we all make mistakes.
Yes, yeah, so I would have been a lot more careful with my money. I would have stayed away from hard drugs.
I
would have not have drank so much to the point where I had to stop because it was affecting my life. I hurt some people that I loved through the years and I made some mistakes, you know. I was in anger. I've said things I wish I hadn't. I can't say. I mean, I got to live the dream that I always had as a little kid of being a working musician. The dream actually turned out much better than I had hoped. But there's a price, and that price is being away from watching my children grow up every day. I can't ever get that back. So, I mean, you know, I spend a lot of time with my kids, hands-on when I'm home. I'm like, I drive to school, I'm going to pick up my daughter and go to the volleyball game. Same fruity dad as every one of you, you know. Any one of father out there, I do the same stuff. And
I mean,
I'm not some big special guy. I go out. I mean, like I have famous friends.
Yeah.
I mean, every once in a while, somebody goes, hey, my 11-year-old's like, really, Dad? I go, yeah, hey, listen, these people are nice. They help pay for our house. We have to be nice to the people.
Do you have a lot of friends?
I'm flattered, that really. I mean, it's not like it happens all the time.
Do you have a lot of friends that aren't famous?
A lot of my childhood friends are still my childhood friends.
Still the same guys.
Yeah, we get together all the time. Well, not all the time. We try to get together at least every couple of months or so.
Who's the famous guy that you really loved, you just feel really comfortable with? Like, you could be yourself a million percent. With Ringo, you could be yourself a million percent.
Yeah.
There's no bullshit. There's just two guys hanging out in a room. You're with Ringo Starr, and you don't feel at all like I have to be someone else.
No.
It's Steve Lukather.
We become great friends. I respect and adore the man, and he's took a shine to me. And you know, we hang outside of the gig. You know, I heard from him this morning. As a matter of fact, you know,
can we call
I still
him?
Get
Let's
a
call
kick
right
when
now.
I still
Let's
get
call
a
Ringo.
Listen, I'd be lying if I told you I didn't get a kick when I see Ringo texting.
Yeah, it's Ringo texting you.
You know, I like every once in a while. I mean, I go back to that. You know, being that kid watching the Beatles on the TV show. But we're way past all that now.
Yeah.
I mean, as a man, if his name was Bob Smith, I go, this is still the coolest guy I've ever met in my life. I want to hang out with this guy. His wisdom, his humor, his just his talents, and it's a joy to be around.
What
man.
About the worst guy? What about one of the worst people you've worked with that you just would never work with again? What's the worst guy you ever play
you
with?
Know,
like,
know,
he's on a tour with you, and you're like, I want to fucking punch this guy.
You
out.
Know, there are a few, but I'm not going to tell you.
You can't
because,
tell me.
Because it just opens up wounds that don't need to be opened up. You know, here's the thing. You know, nobody gets along with everybody 24/7, 100% of the time. There's guys that you meet and you go, oh, that guy's cool. And then you go on the road and you go, hey, that guy's a rub there, man. You know, and I have a tendency to speak my mind.
People know if you don't like
it. I call bullshit when I see it. Not always the popular thing to do.
You ever get in a fist fight?
No, man. I'm a guitar player, dude.
You never had somebody threaten
you? I've mouthed off like I got something to back it up with, but I got nothing, man. Especially now I'm broken. What am I going to... The only thing I'm good for is if I get one lucky punch and can run like a motherfucker. But that's it, man.
I'm an old guy.
Beat somebody up, please.
Are drummers usually the craziest? Is that a rule of thumb? That in a band, the drummer's
I'm
going to
throw myself under the bus and say that I think the guitar players are the worst of all.
Really?
We were the most obnoxious ones. As a collective, not all at the same time.
Right,
but
right,
I mean,
right.
But sometimes there'd be a group of us together. It would be like a Tasmanian devil.
Who kept you in line in the band? Who was the one? Was Paige the guy? Was Jeff the guy? Who was the guy who
it
said,
was
Steve,
Jeff.
You got to chill
Jeff.
Out, man.
Jeff had to throw a look your way, and you'd know. It was the big brother look. Like
you're fucking up, dude.
Yeah.
Stop acting like a dick.
He didn't even have to say nothing. He'd just look at you. And then you'd realize your own sins and go, ooh.
Were you ever in a crowd where it's like 50,000 people watching or 20,000 people watching or more? I know you've played for hundreds of thousands probably. But have you ever played where you fuck up Africa or Rosanna?
Oh, God.
I mean, you rip it apart. You're like, what? I just destroyed this.
Oh, God.
The guys hate me.
No, man. Shit the bed, man. Absolutely shit the bed. Many
I mean,
times.
A real moment that people notice, not just you, because you notice little things.
There's been so many of them. I couldn't count them. It happens almost every night. There's something funny happens. There's so much that can go wrong, you see? The reason why we all love Spinal Tap is because all that shit happened to us, or some permutation of it did, and we've all lived it, get a little lost backstage. I mean, all you know, you just have to, you know, that repeated viewing. And I got to produce their second record, or four tracks on their second record. I'm the right guy for the job. But we went and saw the movie together. No, I mean, yeah, I screw up all the time. I make mistakes. You know what? If you go to a show and there's no mistakes and everything's perfect, then it's probably the record or Pro Tools going, you know? Because, you know, no one's perfect. Itzhak Perlman, the finest violinist on the planet. He'll bend a note a little sharp sometimes.
I'm not talking about bending a note. I'm talking about fucking the song up.
I'm talking about one of the finest musicians ever to walk the planet.
Right.
As opposed to a bunch of rock and roll guys who make mistakes. You know, man, there's been some horrible nights. And, you know, especially if I was drinking back in the day, it was like, no, God, man, it's like watching yourself die slowly. And then the comments are brutal. I know what it's like to be a pinata.
Just beating on, just bleed open.
You bring your baseball bat with the nails in next time so you can really dig in there. You have to have a sense of humor about this shit. Otherwise, you kill yourself with a box cutter to your neck or something.
What's the funniest shit that ever happened to you on stage? The funniest thing that ever happened where I don't, just the experience.
Well, you know, it's going to be hard to explain because, and it's not even a nasty story. This is really G-rated.
I want to hear it.
It is so fucking funny. No, that's not G-rated. back in the day, when the keyboards had gotten to the point where it's a controller on stage. Instead of you'd go see Yes and there'd be 500 keyboards on stage and stuff. Well, you know, as tech progressed, there'd be one keyboard on stage and there'd be a guy off stage, almost like a second engineer, pre-mixing all the keyboards and stuff like that. And there's some samples and stuff like that, horn sample or, you know, sound effect or something like this. And they're all the different songs are on one keyboard. And there's a guy there that can touch it and do this. It's just adding to the sound, you know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
But it's all the songs on one keyboard. So we used to have the song called Stop Loving You that we played. It was a hit in Europe. And Dave would do this beautiful, me and him would do this intro thing to it. And he'd play these really lush chords. And I do kind of like the Dave Gilmore, not unlike the beginning. We were trying to do Shine On You Crazy Diamond kind of thing, the intro to it.
Right.
And then we go into our song. Well, Dave's all alone, spotlight on him. I'm in the dark. The spotlight hits me when I'm supposed to come in. But the arena's full. It hits Dave with the spotlight, and the controllers change. So when he played a chord on the keyboard,
it was different.
Everything that was on every song all hit at the same time. It was the most amazing noise I'd ever heard in my life. And the look on
was
Dave,
it a bad noise?
It was horrendous. I can't even explain to you.
There was a million noises at once.
It was like you could never recreate it, ever.
Did you shit your
pants?
But
I knew what it was. See, the audience just heard this cacophony of noise. They had no idea what this was, but I knew what happened. And the look on Paige's face, he was staring at me because he was the only one lit. The whole audience is looking at him with his head. And then, you know, the lighting guy doesn't really realize what's going on. He just goes, oh, he fucked up. He's going to hit me with the cue. The light hits me. I'm on my knees, howling, laughing. I can't play. And the whole audience, Dave's like going, mouthing fuck you to me, play something, help me out here, while they switch the program again. I'm like,
so what did you jump into?
I just played some shit, you know. I'm just, you know, bought him some time. He came back in, no one was the wiser. But that's the kind of stuff. I knew what it was, and it was the most, we still talk about
it's human.
How could we make that noise? This indescribable noise, sound effects, horns, different weird things from all these different songs all coming off at once when he's supposed to play a chord. There's no chord, it's just noise. It's like, it was amazing.
What a great memory, huh?
Well, we had all kinds of memories like that.
Any naked girls were on stage?
Yeah.
A lot?
Not a lot now.
Were you the biggest ladies' man in the band?
I had a moment. Yeah, I mean, you know, after my first divorce, I sort of went crazy for about 10 years and had a few cool relationships, and then I went crazy again, and then I got married again.
Did you blow a lot of your money in the beginning on drugs, coke, stuff like that back in the day?
No, I mean, we got ripped off is what happened.
What do you mean you got ripped off?
Well, we all were at the same accountants and stuff like that, and we were all partying, but, you know, we're also all making a lot of money as session players and in a band, but they were filtering money off the top, and they'd commingle our money together, you know, and it was a mess. So, you know, being young kids, you know, given the keys to the kingdom and the money to spend, you know, I was smart. I bought a house, and then I parlayed it into another house, and but I wasn't saving a lot of money. And I was lied to, saying, oh, we got this in. We got this pension account for you. Didn't have anything. They were just ripping us off blind. And we were too young and stupid and busy to realize what was going on.
Well, you look at Wikipedia, and Wikipedia will say Steve Lukather is worth $80 million. That's what it says on Wikipedia. Net worth, hey, man, $80 million.
That's hilarious.
Don't you wish you had $80 million?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, over the course of the years, who knows? But like, you know, that ain't my bank account, man. I do okay, but I don't do $80 million okay.
$80 million's really good.
That'd be strong.
That would be. This has been a real.
I
treat,
do okay,
man.
But I mean, that $80 million okay. I want $80 million, then I'll retire. Okay.
You'll retire with $80 million.
If you give me $80 million, I'm done. You'll never see me again.
Where would you go?
I'd find an island somewhere. Probably just let my hair go white and sit and play in some little band and not grow a beard and never tell anybody who I am and just live the rest of my life out on the beach hanging out with my kids.
If I gave you
the wet dream, but I'll never happen. But you know.
If I gave you an acoustic guitar right now, what's the one song if you had to play just a couple of licks? Mm-hmm.
as hell. Heaven from hell, blue skies of pain. When you tell it to me, I'm a cold sea of rain.
Is that right? I don't know. Favorite Stone song?
Oh, there's too many. There's too many. The Stones were another one. They were like second, you know.
Hardest Hendrix song to play?
Hardest?
And could you play 1983?
Give me a pick if you want me to fucking do this. You know,
I'm telling you, man. I've been trying to get you to do this forever. You've been the busiest fucker in the world. People will
love you.
Thank
you for having me, Michael.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, I did, man. It's always fun to hang with you, Rosie.
This has been a real treat for me. This is the first rock star in my fucking podcast. His book, The Gospel, According to Luke. This is probably his one and only book that he'll ever write. Am I right?
I'm not going to be Stephen King. No, that's not going to happen. I wish.
Steve Vai wrote the foreword. Dude, look them up. Toto's still playing. They're better than ever. Steve, I've seen you guys like probably 8 times. It always sounds amazing.
Well, this year is going to be the last year we play for a while. We've been on a cycle for a long time. We're going to take a line.
Is this 40?
43 now.
43 years.
We've started the 40 trips around doing the whole process of making the record, doing the tour worldwide. We're in year 2, so October 20th is the last show. So if you want to come see us, now would be the time.
Dude, go see them. Trust me. I take all my friends. It's just a fucking great time. One of the best guitar players, one of the best guys I know, Steve Lukather. Thank you for allowing me to be inside you, my brother.
Welcome to Talkville, the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.